1 Corinthians chapter 16. Well, football season is over. Interesting reaction. But I was intrigued by the reports a few days ago that were in USA Today about the success of the commercials that were shown in the Super Bowl. Did you realize that for those 30-second commercials that were shown in the Super Bowl, those corporations paid $950,000 for every 30 seconds of airtime that they got? That's a lot of money, folks. And a number of the corporations spent another $3 million in making up those commercials that were shown for $950,000 for 30 seconds of airtime. And the ironic thing to me is, the studies indicate that when the commercials come on, that's inevitably when people get up and go out to the kitchen or use the restroom or whatever. Money is being spent in these commercials, but there's a huge debate now raging in advertising circles about how effective are they. And yet, they're almost sold out for next year's Super Bowl already. Because football seems to have intrigued this country, grabbed the nation. It's the single most watched event on television all year long. People tune in to watch the Super Bowl, even if it's the Buffalo Bills. That's amazing to me. People tune in. Why? Why is our country and now the world globally so intrigued by professional football? What's the deal? I suggest to you that part of the appeal of professional football is that in a country, in a culture, in a time in history where there's an increased amount of gender bending, that football is sort of a bastion of masculinity. Men are men, at least supposedly. At least that's the image the NFL seeks to portray very carefully. And consequently, in this time when roles of men and women, the distinction between men and women, are increasingly blurred, people are drawn to football, where it really is a bastion seemingly of masculinity. Tune in, watch guys get knocked down and John Madden blabber on or whatever. It's just sort of intriguing, you see. Get down and dirty. I've been pondering this for a few days now. What is the deal in our culture, in our country, in this time in history in which we live? Why is there a blurring? Why are men increasingly feminized and women seeking masculine roles in society? What's the deal? Androgyny is now an accepted part of our culture in so many ways. In behavior patterns, in philosophy, in dress. How can this be? What's the deal? Well, we're not alone in that dilemma. You see, at Corinth, when Paul was writing this epistle, the church at Corinth had become sort of, a community of quiche-eating Christians. The men had neglected their responsibility as men. They were not leading the congregation. It was the women, because of the men forfeiting their role and responsibility. As we have seen, the women emerged, understandably, but tragically, as being those that were sort of taking the lead in many ways there at Corinth. It was true in the culture generally, and it was true in the church specifically. And Paul seeks to correct this, where women were flaunting their independence. There was a very real women's liberation movement that had taken hold, no doubt, at Corinth. And Paul talked about the shame and dishonor this was bringing to their husbands, and how they should be sensitive to bigger issues, and that is the watching of angels and the view of God Himself. And Paul, we saw, addressed this issue in 1 Corinthians 11. And he talked about the role of women, as we looked at most carefully a few weeks ago. That they were not to be taking the lead and ignoring their husbands in their pursuit of spirituality, but were rather to be traveling with their husband, submitted to their husband, learning from their husband. It's not chauvinism, it's wisdom. And we explored that as well. We went through that section of Scripture and saw the validity and the reasons why it makes so much sense as it relates to the sanctity of marriage and the building of family when you go in God's way. If you weren't here for those studies, perhaps you might want to pick up those particular tapes from 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and chapter 14. But as Paul is here closing the letter, Paul is sort of like a coach in the locker room, once again addressing the men. I almost feel Paul's heart at this point as he's signing off, as he's ending this corrective epistle. He's had so much to say to this messed up congregation. And it's almost as though now with these punchy, powerful exhortations, he's really addressing this quiche-eating Christian community in a very direct way. It's almost as though he's a coach giving a pep talk in a locker room, like coaches can do. Let's listen in and see what he says to those Christians there that had sort of lost their proper role, the men weak, the women surging ahead, leaving their men behind. What does he say? In verse 13, where we left off, Paul says, "Watch ye." He says, "Stand fast in the faith. Quit you like men. Be strong." The word "quit" there is acquit or act. It doesn't mean give up on being a man. It means act like a man. Old King James English, you see. It's an exhortation that is written in a most powerful way linguistically in the original language. It's a strong, imperative exhortation. Watch. Stand fast in faith. Act like men. Be strong. And I want us to ponder that for a few minutes as we come to the close of this epistle. Paul saying clearly four things directed to the men at Corinth specifically. First of all, he says, watch out. Secondly, stand fast. Thirdly, grow up. And fourth, be strong. Good exhortation for any man who wants to walk in the way of the Lord today. First, watch. Watch. Watch for what? The Scriptures tell us men. The Scriptures exhort us specifically that we are to be men who watch. We are to, number one, look out for the prowling lion. We are to look out for the prowling lion. When Paul says watch, what are we to watch for? The Scriptures further amplify that understanding. In 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter says, be sober, be vigilant, be watching. Because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. Be sober. Be vigilant. Because the enemy is prowling around. The roaring lion is prowling, seeking to devour. And in these days, at this time, man, it's happening, man. I came across a quote this week that disturbed me greatly. It is from the Congressional Quarterly. I want to read it to you. If you think that we are living in easy days where we can kick back and cruise, brothers, and need not worry about our families and our sons and our daughters, boy, your head is in the sand. You're not watching. You're not doing what Paul commands you to do when he says watch. When Peter says be vigilant, be sober, because the enemy is going about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Congressional Quarterly, Congressional Record, February. The homosexual advocacy group, quote, "We shall sodomize your sons, emblems of your feeble masculinity, of your shallow dreams and lies. We shall seduce them in your schools, in your dormitories, in your gymnasiums, your locker rooms, your sports arenas, your seminaries, your youth groups. In your movie theaters, in your bathhouses, in your army bunkhouses, your truck stops, your House of Congress, wherever men are with men together, your sons, they shall become our minions and do our bidding, and they shall be recast into our image." This, a speech given before our own United States Congress, written in the Congressional Record, available for anyone to pick up and read through. Let me tell you, man, the days are becoming darker. This is not meant to panic us, but meant to make us sensitive and aware that, man, we cannot afford to keep our head in the sand as the proverbial ostrich. But realize now, even on the high school campuses, there is a feminizing, a softening of men, of boys. It's true. I am extremely aware of this as one who is the father of a teenage son, watching teenagers constantly, observing what's happening culturally, reading the newspapers. There's a softening. And the intention is not to make males simply more sensitive. It's to ultimately seduce them into perversion. And if your sons, dear brothers, are beginning to show tendencies of this kind of androgyny, in the way they now kiss each other on the campuses, the way they now greet each other, it's something which I believe that, Dad, you need to be aware of. On CNN 2 weeks ago, I was stunned as I sat there and watched kid after kid, football player after athlete interviewed, the big guys on the campus saying, one after another, "We are now bisexual." That is the hot ticket on the campus today in Southern California and in many other parts of the country. To say that you're bisexual means, man, you're really a swinger. You're really hot. You just do it with anyone, you see. And homosexuality has taken on a badge of honor in the realm of bisexuality. And I think that fathers, listen, keep an eye on this. Be careful. The problem is, men, we are being beat up through the media. We are being branded as being homophobic, Neanderthal. It is incredible the amount of pressure that you feel when you stand up for values that are biblical. But God's ways are so right. And I care not, hey, if you've got sons, daughters, you need to be watching for the prowling lion, seeking whom he may devour. And the prowling lion inevitably goes after the young person, particularly. They're role models. Cindy Crawford now coming out as a bisexual. Coming out with K.D. Lang and in this whole sick modeling world. It's wrong what's going on. It's wrong what's coming down. Don't let your sons and your daughters get involved in that world. It's seductive. It's dangerous. It's damnable. And moms and dads are putting their kids in a world that is gender bending and twisted and wrong. Be careful. Watch. Keep your antenna up, your knees down. You might be blessed with a beautiful daughter or a handsome son. The roaring lion goes about with seductions of fame and stardom. Be careful. Now, Peter says, as a pastor, as a brother, as one who felt the onslaught of Satan, as Jesus said, Peter, Satan wants to sift you like sand, but I'm going to pray for you, Peter, and when you're converted, strengthen the brothers. Peter knew what it was like to feel the heat of hell. And Peter comes out in his later years and says, be vigilant, be sober, because the enemy will seek to devour. Watch for the devouring lion. Look out for the prowling lion. But also, dear men, look up for the promised lion. Hey, look up. Not only are we told to watch, as Peter says, for the prowling lion, but Jesus tells us over and over again, doesn't he? In Matthew's gospel, watch, he says, watch for the hour of the coming of the Lord. It's coming, verse 42 of Matthew 24. Watch therefore, for the Lord comes in an hour that you think not. How many of you honestly, really, truly, how many of us here this evening really, truly, honestly believe that the Lord is coming in this next hour? Raise your hand. Not many. That means it could very well be this next hour. In such an hour as you think not. In the hour that you're not expecting, in the hour that you're not thinking is going to be the hour, that will be the time, really. So I can look up, you see, as I look out, oh my goodness, as I look out, my heart breaks. I'm seeing what's happening culturally. I'm aware of what's happening in the Christian community. Good people being sucked in to wrong stuff. My heart breaks about what people are watching on TV who know the Lord and love Him, but they watch and take in this stuff, even though the Scriptures tell us clearly that you become like what you behold. You watch junk, you become junk. Oh, but the story is so good in the movie, there's just a couple of parts that are sick.
so it's justifiable to go. No, it isn't. Unless you want to become junk. Oh, give us men who will say, even as the psalmist declared, I will put no wicked thing before mine eyes. I won't put it before my eyes. I won't sit there. I won't allow it in my home. It's not going to be. I'm not going to say, well, this scene's only 2 minutes long, so we paid $7 to get in. Hey, give us men who will say, I'm not going to allow wicked things to be flashing before me, my wife, my kids, in this home, which is declared a sanctuary. It's just not going to be. Give us men who know how to use the clicker on their TV. Give us men who, the minute a beer commercial comes on or some sort of a trip to sell you some piece of junk and they use flesh to do it, just click it, man. Give us men who know what it means to watch, to look out for the prowling lion wisely. And look up, for the promised lion, the lion of the tribe of Judah. Behold, he comes with 10,000s of his saints, and things are going to be right then, brethren. The Lord is coming back. Oh man, I get so sad these days watching the news. I mean, what do you have to do to get into jail today? What does it take? If you wanted to go to jail, how can you get in? I know, you say. I'll blast my parents as they're sitting watching TV with a shotgun. Surely, boom, boom, 16 shots. Certainly any sane society would say, lock those guys up or hang them from their neck. I'm puzzled. I don't get it. I don't understand this culture that we live in anymore. Parents gunned down by men who lie, saying that they were no part of it until women lawyers come on the scene. Now, don't get me off on that subject. How can these men get off shooting their parents in the back with shotguns? And our culture says, well, we need to understand their victimization. Watching too much Oprah and Phil and Sally Jesse Raphael, that's the problem, folks. We've been talk show-ized in this culture. We've gotten away from the Bible and we tune in to Sister Oprah and Saint Phil. And let me tell you something. It's disastrous. Okay, well, that doesn't work. I know what I'll do. I'll cut off my husband's private parts. And certainly that would get me in jail. It would have to. No. You can mutilate your spouse and you become a hero. You become honored. Groups rally around you. You're free, you see. Well, okay, if I can't kill my parents or mutilate my spouse, I can molest children. That would do it. Ask Michael Jackson. You can molest kids and, hey, his fans are flocking around him. In fact, again, Newsweek magazine reported that his sales of records are at all-time high as of this week. Fans are flocking and pouring out their support, saying, Michael, we love you. We want you to get well. We hope that you can get through this trauma, this problem. Well, okay, if I kill my parents and that doesn't do it, or mutilate my spouse and that doesn't do it, and molest kids, I know what I'll do. In national TV, I'll pull a guy from a truck and I'll beat him with a brick. Certainly, with that being caught on video, me beating this person who's just driving through South Central LA, if I take him out of his truck, he's minding his own business, he's in the wrong area accidentally, and I beat his brains out. Hey, that'll get me in jail. No. I don't understand the Reginald Denny case. You say, John, you're just too simplistic. Well, I'm sorry, but folks, how do you get into jail today? Oh, Jim Baker found the answer. He's still in jail. Jim Baker, he sold too many timeshares over TV. 75 years. Let's lock away the evangelist Jim Baker, a danger to society. Can you believe? You can kill your parents, mutilate your spouse, molest boys, beat people's brains out. But if you're an evangelist and you do something business-wise that's stupid, 75 years, lock him up and throw away the key. I can't help but think about Jim Baker being shackled. Remember when he was shackled, hands and feet, shackled, a real danger to society. Keep Jim Baker shackled. And I'm not justifying what he did, but folks, something is very wrong. Something is very deeply wrong. So what's our hope? Does desperation and despair set in? No. Jesus said this is the way it's going to be at the end, as it was in the days of Noah, in the days of Lot. Sexual perversion, bizarrity, lack of justice, idiocy. As it was in the days of Lot, as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be. And so you see, I see these things happen. And yes, I look out for the prowling lion, but I also look up for the promised lion and say, Lord, I know your coming is nigh, even at the very door. And when you come, things are going to be right at last. For you shall rule the world with a rod of iron. And things are going to be right. And we can let our kids play in the streets again without worrying who might be prowling after them. Hey, brother, do your kids at home hear you talk about the coming of the Lord? Are you heeding Paul's advice to watch? Jesus says, watch, for in the hour you think not, the Son of Man comes. Look up. Peter says, watch. Be vigilant, be sober, look out. There's a prowling lion. Are you aware of that? This is where the balance is. We're aware of what's going on, but we're aware of what's coming down. Jesus Christ is on his way. That fills my house with both sobriety about our culture and hilarity about the promise of his coming. Paul goes on to say, watch out, number one. Stand fast. Number two, men, stand fast. He says, stand fast in the faith. Men, stand fast. Don't give ground. I look at these massive oak trees, and I realize those massive oak trees were not massive initially. An oak tree is nothing more than just a little nut that refused to give ground year after year. And I say, Lord, that's me. I know I'm a little nuts. Kind of crazy in some ways, Lord, but I know that by your grace, I don't have to give ground. I can root in, plug in, Be consistent in my time of worship. Be committed to the study of the Scripture. I can say, hey, this thing I can do, lots of stuff I can't, but this I can do. You can count on me to not give ground. I will not look back and say, I was in church 5 years ago more than I am today. Or I was reading the Scriptures 5 years ago more than I am today. Man, you cannot afford to say, well, I'm just sort of not as into it anymore. I was telling the brothers this morning, as an observer of people who succeed, this observation is true. People who are successful in any endeavor have this one thing in common. They're part of the one percentile, one out of 100, who finish what they began. Most people, whether you're talking about in career, with kids, or concerning the things of the kingdom, most people have great ideas and start well, but they don't finish. They give ground. They say, hey, I'm going to, and they mean well, but I suggest to you that the vast majority of people just don't follow through. We don't follow through. And consequently, we don't excel the way the Lord would have us to do. Jesus, my Lord, set the model for me. When they're in John chapter 17, talking to his Father, as we listen into that high priestly prayer, he says, Father, I have glorified thee and finished the work which you gave me to do. I've glorified you and finished the work that you gave me to do. I finished it. It wasn't just an idea in my journal or a thought stirring in my mind or a commitment I made one New Year's Eve. I'm following through. I'm going to finish that which you've placed on my heart, that which you've put in my mind, that which you've shown me by your Spirit as I've studied the Word. I'm going to follow through with your help and by your grace. I believe the Lord wants every one of you men, every one of us brothers, to be successful, hugely so, in the things of the kingdom and the things that are eternal. His burden, he says, is easy. His load is light. He calls us into the ministry, as we've seen previously, of being robed in linen, not wool, not that which causeth sweat or perspiration, but he gives you something which is easy and fun and works for you. But will you follow through? Or do you give ground? I think of that classic quintessential story of a man who didn't give territory, one of David's mighty men. Oh, you know him, Shammah. Petey and I were talking about him today. Shammah, what a guy. One of David's mighty men who was given a job to do, and that was to watch the lentils, to guard the beans. The Philistines came in mass. Everybody in Israel split and ran for their lives. The men, they backed away. But Shammah said, I've been given a job to do, watch the beans. So I'm going to die watching the beans. Come on, Philistines, make my day. I'm going to guard the beans. And the Lord looks down from heaven and he says, I like that. A man who's not giving ground. A man who is standing fast in faith. And the Lord says, I'm going to do a miracle through him. And Shammah single-handedly defeated the Philistine army. Singly. Because God honored a man who did what Paul told these Corinthians to do. Stand fast. Has God called you to teach Sunday school? Stand fast and do it and stay with it until He instructs you in a different direction. Don't just become bored with it, man. Don't just become tired of it. You keep that which the Lord has given you to do. Did He tell you to join with us on Wednesday night and learn the New Testament? Then be here. Did He call you to have a time of morning worship? Then do so. Did He speak to your heart about spending time with your son? Then get it on and do it. But this idea of, well, we sort of begin well but never finish, that's why there's so much mediocrity in all realms of life. People start but don't keep after it, don't keep on it, because they get wimpy. A wimpy kind of Christianity. The Corinthians, that's where they were, you see. Watch. Watch out. Stand fast, number two. Number three, grow up. Acquit you like men and be strong. Hey, grow up, Corinthian Christian, Corinthian man. Be like a man. Interesting, this phraseology for you students of the Scripture, quit you like men and be strong. You know, that's not just the cry of the apostle. That's not just Paul's exhortation. The Philistines use the same phraseology exactly. The Philistines. Interesting, I'll read it to you. In 1 Samuel chapter 5, you can recall the story, many of you. The Philistines heard a great shout from the camp of the Israeli army because the Ark of the Covenant had been brought into the camp of Israel. And they go, oh no, the Philistines were freaked and they said, oh man, God has come into their camp. We've had it. And they began to go, woe unto us, woe unto us. Who shall deliver us out of the hand of these mighty gods of Israel? These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with plagues in the wilderness. There has not been such a thing hitherto, for woe unto us. And they wimped out. Woe, woe, woe. If Phil was there, they would have had an encounter group and discussed freaked out Philistines. And then, listen to this. One of them stood up and said, be strong and quit yourselves like men, O Philistines. Quit yourselves like men and fight. I said, oh, okay. And they wiped their nose and dried their eyes and they engaged in the battle and they won. For reasons that we will not explore this evening. But the fact is, the Philistine, the worldling, the heathen is saying, give us men. The same phraseology, the same phrase precisely that Paul uses in 1 Corinthians, the Philistines say, quit yourselves like men, be strong. Act like men. Quit sniveling. Be strong. Even the Philistines are looking for that. Even the world really is waiting to see a group of men like you who will be strong. Be strong, Nehemiah said, didn't he? As the wall was going up, the wall being built around the city of Jerusalem, what did Brother Nehemiah say? He encouraged them, didn't he? I'll read to you from chapter 4 of Nehemiah. He says, I set the men after their families, they were on the wall, constructing the wall, where their house was, where they would be living as a family. And I looked at the people and said, be not afraid. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible or awesome. And fight for your sons and your daughters and your wives and your houses. Nehemiah said, guys, fight for your families. Do what Job did. Steve and I were sharing about this a couple of days ago. Do what Job did. We both have teenage sons, and we were getting together just sharing about how we can be even more of what the Lord would have us to be with our families. And we were considering together that great man Job. Job chapter 1, who we see that every morning it says he got up in the times of their kids feasting, they're celebrating, and for each one of his sons he made a sacrifice and prayed lest they sin in their hearts and curse God. That's strength. How come? You ever taken a bull every morning? Killed them, filleted them, spread them out? One for each of your children? That's hard work. That's perspiration. That's bloody. That's sweaty. That's tough. Dad, have you fought for your son and your daughter even with 5 minutes today on your knees? I'm not asking you to kill a bull. But I'm saying, have you seriously realized that there's a war going on for the soul of your kids, your wives? Do we understand that we're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers? There's spiritual forces that seek to destroy our homes, our family, our children, and we must sacrifice, men, of our own energy, our own comfort, our own ease, and get down and intercede on behalf of our wives and our children. It's just not an option. It's just in these days not an option. You desire to be a righteous man? Job was the righteousest man on the face of the earth. None more righteous than he. And what did Job do? Hey, every morning in those days of his kids' vulnerability, he got up and he prayed. Sacrificed. Fight. Fight the fight in the spirit against the principalities and powers that are messing up the minds of your kids and causing problems in your home. Unless you and me, we become like Jesus, who said, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, I would gather you under my wing as a mother hen gathers her chicks. I want to bring you under my covering. You wouldn't let me. But I give you the opportunity, as he wept over the city and prayed intercessorily. Honestly, Dad, all of us who are in that category, have you spent more time talking to your kids or praying for your kids? Son, you better. Daughter, and there's a place for exhortation. Don't misunderstand. But I have discovered this, and I've shared it with you for years now. Anytime that you're wrestling against flesh and blood, you're fighting the wrong battle. If you're wrestling against flesh and blood, you're missing it. That's not the issue. There are entities and powers and principalities. There are demonic influences that are clouding the thinking of your son, your daughter, your wife, yourself. And I need to wrestle in
intensity, with consistency in prayer. I need to heed the exhortation of Nehemiah. Be like a man. John, fight for your family, for your sons and your daughters and your wife. Fight. And the warfare that we're to be engaged in is not against flesh and blood. I know many of you would be willing to go and let the principal or the teacher have a piece of your mind. Most of you need to keep every piece you've got. Most of us do. Certainly me. But in reality, I'll tell you, if the Lord leads you, terrific. But let me highly, highly encourage you to spend more time praying, fighting the principalities and powers before you rush off in a huff to change the school situation or the Little League or the Cub Scouts or whatever it might be. Watch out, men. Stand fast, brothers. Don't give ground. Be in the one percentile who finishes what God has called you to do, what God has told me to do, you see. Grow up. Act like men. Grow up. There's sons and daughters under your wing. Grow up. Sacrifice as Job did. Grow up. That's Paul's exhortation. Be strong. Number four. Watch, stand fast, act like men, be strong. I cannot help but think of the reference to Joshua. Here he comes into the place of leadership after Moses was taken home to heaven. Before Moses departed, he told Joshua there in chapter 1 on three occasions, Joshua, be strong. Be strong. Be strong. Moses, after 40 years of really amazingly successful leadership. Sure, he had some problems, but my goodness, what an incredible leader Moses proved to be. In that last talk to his protege, Joshua, he said, son, be strong, be strong, be strong. And then at the end of chapter 1, the people say congregationally, Joshua, we'll follow you, only be strong and of good courage. We'll follow you, Joshua, but we ask of you to be strong. Be of good courage. Your wives will follow you, your sons will follow you, your daughters will follow you. Men, if you too, if we will hear the exhortation of Moses, of the congregation of Israel, of Paul the Apostle, and be strong. And Joshua was. And he addressed the people, hearing the exhortation from Moses, the witness of the Spirit in his heart, and the cry from the congregation for strength. He said, hey, he said, you choose this day whom you will serve, but as for me and my house, we, corporately, will serve the Lord. He didn't say, right, Mrs. Joshua? Does that fit into our plan? Can we serve? What do you think, hon? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. He didn't ask Mrs. Joshua. They didn't have a family meeting. He said, look, we will serve the Lord. Honey, Junior, Princess, we're traveling together. This is not something which is debatable. It's not something which is optional. We, as a family, will serve the Lord. Now, you choose what you want to do, he said to the congregation corporately. But as for me and my house, give me a man, show me a man who will say, my wife
and my kids are involved in serving the Lord together. This is not an option. Well, what do you think, hon? Give us men who will be strong, like Joshua, who will set the pace for their family and say, this is not an option. But you don't know my wife, you say. The scriptures don't give you that loophole. It doesn't say, lead your family, unless your wife is a real strong personality. Then, you know. Lead your kids, unless they're kind of rebellious, then let them go their own way. You say, this is what we're doing on Sunday, on Wednesday, or whatever it might be that you're addressing. This is what we do as a family. This is not optional. It's not negotiable. Junior says, well, I don't want to. Oh, I love you, Junior. There's the door. If you want to set your own rules, fine. I'll pray for you. My heart is with you. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. This is the way it is in the house. Problem is today, precious people, it's been lost to too great of a degree. The pursuit of money, getting ahead in careers, has caused division in family that's unbelievable. It's tragic. Sobering. Well, my wife can't travel with me. My husband can't come. Our kids can't, because we're pursuing careers. It's hard to make ends meet. I know in some cases that that is reality. But in many cases, that's just not so. It's a choice that people have chosen to make in this culture. Wanting the bigger house, the nicer car, the ski boat, or whatever. Wife gets a career. But it's interesting to me, quote, I'm sharing with you from Front Lines, not a Christian organization. The study of working women in America shows that after subtracting expenses for daycare for the children, clothing costs for the profession, transportation, lunches, hair care, additional taxes, etc., 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 the net take-home pay of the average American working woman is $1,800 a year. The average American woman, when you figure out all the expenses, and you really have to be sharp and honest to do that, the average American working woman makes $1,800 a year. Then you have to weigh that against leaving your kids. Not there for your sons and your daughters for $1,800. Well, you say, no one would do that. What is the price? Would you leave your kids for $3,000? $5,000? $15,000? $20,000 a year? What's the cost? What's the price? And I know that I am stepping on toes. I don't necessarily mean to do that. I do want to stimulate thought and call people to prayer, husbands and wives together, saying, is this the way that we want to navigate parenting? What's happening in America? Let's ask Donna Shalala. Listen, Children's Defense Fund, Donna Shalala, before she became in the car, not Carter, Clinton administration. Since 1966, which was the watershed year, according to Children's Defense Funds, when women actively entered into the career field. That's the year that they have set, a secular organization says, this is the year when women were, in their sense, liberated or free to move into the working community. Every day, 2,795 teenage girls come home pregnant. 500% increase since 1966, that watershed year. Every day, 1,106 girls between 13 and 16 get an abortion. A 1,100% increase every single day. Every day, same age group, teenage girls, 4,219 come down with a sexually transmitted disease, a 335% increase since 1966, the watershed year. Now, every day, 135,000 children take guns to school. Every day in America, 10 are killed. Every day, 6 teens commit suicide. 211 are convicted for drug felonies. And on the statistics go. And the Children's Defense Fund, a liberal, secular organization, attributes that to women moving into the workforce. Now, their argument is not that women shouldn't work, but that corporations should provide daycare centers. That's their whole point. But I read the statistics and I say, you know, ladies, you got to think carefully. Why, ladies, John? Because read the Old Testament carefully, read the history of Israel, and you will see something very intriguing. And what is that? In the listing of kings of Judah and Israel, it's amazing because you'll have a strong king, a good king, a godly king, followed by an inept, inane, carnal, wicked king, followed by a strong king, a godly king, a good king. And as you study the kings of Judah particularly, you see this almost every other generation of one king rising up into spirituality and leading the nation righteously, and the next king just really debauched and depraved. The interesting thing in that is this. As you study the lives of the kings, it is always the mother who's listed in connection with the success or failure of the king. Women, sisters, however this translates in your particular situation, I want you to understand something. The greatest opportunity in life is at your disposal. Loving, discipling, caring, guiding, nurturing, teaching, training children who are in your home. And I don't care how good the nanny might be, she's not the mother. And I don't care how good the daycare center seems to be, she's not the mother. And if you're in a situation where you really, truly have to leave the little guys because there is no other choice, I understand, and God will grace you and He'll give you wisdom. But I'm asking for all of us to be real honest. At a time when the days are becoming eviler and darker, and it's going to get more so, can we afford to have Junior sent off to a daycare center so we can have a bigger house? I'm not sure we can afford that in these days. I'm not sure it makes sense anymore. Now, you're saying, well, John, in our situation, there's no alternative. Fine. If you together pray and say there just isn't an alternative, great. But for many, many couples, there's all kinds of alternatives. And they choose not to take it. And quite frankly, we are seeing kids not being tended properly, even at the Applegate Fellowship. Because mom's not there. And she could be. We just have to think things over again, folks. And if you can say, my husband and I, or my wife and I, we've prayed, we've sought the Lord. It's not just something that we're on a lark on, trying to get something newer, bigger, or better. It's a necessity, and fine. But would you consider it on your knees? Dear husband and wife sitting there together tonight, I commend you. Pray about it. Lord, is there something else that we should be prioritizing with these little guys under our care? Be strong, men. If the truth is known, a lot of the sisters, quite frankly, just don't want to be home. Bottom line. Interesting, when Christians are more and more leaving the home, Wall Street Journal, 6 months ago, front page story, clipped it, meant to bring it tonight, sitting on my desk. Front page story, the new status symbol in the world on the East Coast in New York, Manhattan, where trends are set. The status symbol is women who stay at home. You've really made it. You're really successful. The byline in that story was, bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, ? It can't be done, ! Gals, you've been lied to. I can bring home the bacon, I can fry it up in a pan, I can love my husband and never make him whatever it is, forget that he's a man because I'm a woman. And a whole generation of sisters sat there with husbands that were too weak to say anything and said, yeah, I can bring home the bacon, I can fry it up in a pan, I can do this with you and make my kids come, and it can't be done. Something gives. Something is let go. Something is undone. Folks, something is lost. I think Barbara Bush is right. I'm not trying to be partisan here. But I like what she said at Wellesley College at the graduation exercise last year. Barbara Bush, I think she has some matriarchal wisdom. Quote, at the end of your life, women, she said, you will never regret not having passed one more test, not winning one more verdict, or not closing one more deal. But you will regret deeply the time not spent with your husband, your child, your parent, or your friend. Took some guts to say that to a women's college, Wellesley, top women there studying for careers. But she shared her heart rightly. What you will regret is I could have spent more time with my son or my daughter, nurturing them a little better. I know you're doing good, gals, but could you do better? Could you do better with the kids?
John, are you then condemning me, my wife, our family? No. If you are led by the Lord in that way of careers, that's fine. As long as you as a man can say, God has led us to put Junior in childcare, to hire a nanny, whatever it is. If you can say that, good. Go for it. Be strong. Don't let this pastor stop you. Seriously. But just know that what you're doing is instructed by the Lord, guided by the Word, and not just flowing with the messed up culture in which we're living, folks. Men, it's your responsibility. It's not your wife's decision or your kids. It's yours. You decide what needs to happen in your home. And you say, as for me and my house, this is the way we're going. These are non-negotiable. This is the way to live. This is how we're traveling. Verse 14. Finally, let all things be done with charity. See, Paul is arguing against a quiche-eating Christianity, but then he comes right back and warns against a John Wayne mentality. He says, man, watch out. He says, men, stand fast. He says, men, grow up. He says, men, be strong. But lest we go out of here chewing nails and banging heads against each other. Hey, we're tough. He comes right back with the most important thing of all. Not this phony NFL machoism, but something which is much deeper. He says, let all these things, everything, be done with love. With love. It's amazing how wives respond and kids receive when they sense in you, brother, that you're a lover of God and you love your wife and your son and your daughter. And when you die, may every man here be honored with his children saying, my dad was a man of God. He was strong. He stood firm. He acted like a man at a time when there was gender bending and quiche eating. He was a man. But like Abraham Lincoln was called by the poet Carl Sandburg, a man of velvet steel, a velvetness, a tenderness. Well, how does that happen, John? How can you watch out and stand fast and grow up and be strong and at the same time let everything be done with love? How does that happen? How can I do it? You can't. That's the point. It's got to be my giving my life morning by morning to the ultimate man, the Son of Man, Jesus Christ.
saying, Lord, more of you and less of me today. Even as you're doing tonight. And I commend you for that. You can take courses on maleness or courses on family relationships or marriage enrichment seminars and you'll be just like Go Get 'Em Yost. Oh, there in the 1928 Rose Bowl, he looked out at his team there, Michigan State, and he fired them up and said, guys, listen, this is it, the Rose Bowl. Be men. Fight on the field. I want you to play the hardest you've ever played for your sons and your daughters in Michigan. And don't come back unless you come back winners. Now when I count to three, stand up and charge out that door. And he said, one, and the guys were just pumped up. Two, and they were set to go. Three, and they charged out. And a second or two later, he heard a disconcerting sound. And he ran out the doors, and it was the door that led to the swimming pool. True story. They had to postpone that Rose Bowl for 45 minutes while the guys got out, dried up, went meekly out in the field, not having had a chance to blow dry their hair. And you can go to seminars and read books. Now go get them, be a man. But you're going to end up all wet. Your wife will look at you and your kids will wonder and you'll be a big drip in their sight. If you're charging out in your own energy. But if, on the other hand, in humility, you bow your knee before the Son of Man, Jesus Christ, and say, what do you want for my family, my wife, my kids? What do you want for me? Help me to set non-negotiable standards. Help me to lead my family in the way you want me to, with love. Oh my goodness, He will lead you through the right door. And there'll be a steel velvetness to your person. That's what He does. He changes men and He makes them into true men. The Son of Man, Jesus Christ, making us the kind of men that we need to be. Let's pray, shall we? Father, again this evening, as Paul closes this epistle out and shares his heart with these punchy exhortations, I pray that Your Spirit now, Lord, would make applications for us, that we would be led by You. In a culture that's going crazy, at a time when there's so much temptation and sensuality and bizarre behavior and messed up philosophy, we tonight bow our head and humble our heart and say, we need Thee. We need You, Lord. We need You. We need You. We just get so mixed up and I get so distracted and defeated without You, Lord. And as men and women, brothers and sisters, as a family congregationally, we look to You tonight and ask for Your mercy and Your help on the pilgrimage that we're on. That we too, Lord, might watch out and stand fast. That we too might acquit ourselves like men and be strong.
watching, stand fast in the faith, acquit you like men, be strong, looking out and looking up for the promised one to say, let all your things be done in love, in love, let all be done in God's love, in love, let all be done. Watch and pray, stand fast in the faith, acquit all men, be strong, let all be done in the love of God, in love, let all be done. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, Jesus, God's Son.
Let's stand, shall we?